3613, Bitcoin Basics, What You Need to Know. The time has come again where all of a sudden all the questions start coming in about Bitcoin because we're at the mid-level of the bull run, which happens for about a two-year period every four-year cycle. And then we get all the news. You know, last year we got the ETF. Now we got potential Bitcoin strategic reserve. We've broken the $100,000 ceiling. And you tell people over and over again, buy Bitcoin while it's down, and they don't do it. And then they ask you how to buy it when it's up. But I think any time's a good time to get started, because if you get started buying Bitcoin now with a regular basis, you will be here through the rest of this bull cycle. We have no idea where that will end, how high it will go, how far it will retract. But then you'll be able to participate in it when it does correct, which will be great as it's going down, because whatever it tops out at, there will be a correction. So what I'm most worried about doing today for you guys is a show for people that don't know what to do. You've either got a little bit of Bitcoin, or maybe you even have a lot because you bought it a long time ago and now it's stranded on the exchange. You hear me talking about self-custody and you're terrified to do it or what have you, just to try to get you heading in the right direction. I also want to point out I am alone today. I'm a one-eyed man. That's really not a joke. I really am a one-eyed guy. I see about this far. Actually, I see way over here and about this far to this side, right? So that means that it's a challenge for me being myself and following questions. So if you want to ask me a question today, you need to put the word question in all caps, and then you have a pretty good chance of it. And I'm not just fishing for money here. I'm just telling you the truth is if you super chat me when you do that, I will absolutely follow up on it because the system will automatically start. I have it set so if you send me a 99-cent sticker or whatever the hell they call it, that will happen. So that's just one way to make sure that I see it. And as TN Permaculture says, never sell your corn. That's a slang term for Bitcoin. And I would agree with that, sort of. We'll even talk about that. When do you? Well, it depends. And it depends on a great deal of things. But in the end, it would be the last thing that I would part with is my Bitcoin. If I am selling Bitcoin to do something financially, something bad has happened, or I'm really old and I know I'm never going to run out of it. It's going to be one or the other. All right. So with that, let's dig into this, but start out with our sponsors, neither of which have anything directly to do with Bitcoin today. But life is too short for average, and Biltong is delicious. And if you are embarking on a carnivore keto lifestyle, it's also the perfect snack and even meal. And you want to get real Biltong from somebody that really knows how to make it. I'm telling you, that is Anton. Anton is an awesome dude. I've actually met him in person a few times. He doesn't even live that far away from me. He's been to several workshops here. He came to our place last November and actually showed people how to make Biltong. He even sells seasoning to make your own Biltong. But if you want the easy button, you order some Biltong, he sends it to you, then you get addicted and you keep doing it. He even has a way where you can have a recurring buy. I actually get paid for my advertising for Anton in Biltong and Drew Wars, which are a type of dry sausage. Once every 2 weeks, package shows up, and I eat it all before the weekend's over. Anyway, you want to check him out. Again, it's Anton's Land of Biltong. And we will move on now to our second sponsor today, which is Joel Riles with canineacademy.us. You definitely want to check this out if you're a dog owner. Unless you feel like your dogs are the most well-behaved animals on the planet, and anytime you even look at them, they know what to do, you probably could get better at training your dogs. And the time to learn this training, by the way, guys, you know when it is? Now, no matter what point in your life you are, if you are ever going to have a new dog come into your home, it's better to have these fundamentals down before that happens. If you have a dog with some behavioral problems and things like that, they can be corrected when they're 2, 3, 4 years old. It's just a hell of a lot easier if you don't have to do that. I advise you, get over to canineacademy.us and sign up to take the problem-solving library, which is basically a brief free course. See how Joel does things, and if it makes sense for you, go ahead and sign up for the other options. With that, before I dive into today's topic, I actually have something you might want to spend some of your fiat on. I do have an item of the day we'll cover at the end, but I wanted to put this out right now because sometimes these things have a tendency to go away before I actually get the audio out and put out the Daily Mail and stuff like that. I literally got this price alert while I was getting ready to do this show. Like, that's why I'm actually a couple minutes late starting today. The Insta AccuSlim Sous Vide Precision Cooker, which is made by the same people that make the Instapot, it's on sale today for like $68 and change. They say it's 8% off. A little shit. I don't know. I don't know why these people hate money. Normally, this product is $89. The markdown they've based on it being like $70-something dollars. Whenever it's down in the low 70s, I make this an item of the day. I pay attention to the price on this item. It is a great sous vide circulator, very easy to use, and I really like it. So when it is on sale, I tell people. So I'm telling you, they hate money. They're actually giving you a better deal than they say they're giving you. This is a great price. And if you've been looking to pick up a sous vide circulator, I recommend you do it. And if you're listening to me live, you might want to use the link that's down there in the video notes and do it right now, because there is a possibility that by the time I get done today and the audio goes out, it won't be there anymore, because it does happen. That's a good reason, by the way, to be on the Telegram announcement group or list, either one. You can find all that at my website, thesurvivalpodcast.com, and click on Get Social. All right, now, let's explain how we're going to handle this today and how the show got created. So this is a collaboration between you guys, me, and ChatGPT. So I went to the Telegram chats, both for the show and for the alumni members only for workshop people. I went to Primal, which is Noster, and I went to X, and I think I might have posted it one other place and said, this is what I'm doing. I'm doing a show for like people that are new or just getting into it, or they're like a little bit advanced, but they're not way advanced. What do you got for me? And I got questions all over the map, from how do I buy my first Bitcoin, which is the kind of thing I was looking for, to very complex multi-sig tax structure inheritance. And some of it is way too advanced for a show like this. But I took everything that sort of kind of fit, made a giant text file out of it, dumped it on ChatGPT, and I gave it a command. I said, distill this down to about 25 questions, make the questions simple, one-line questions the way I like them. And feel free to add some of your own that you think would help this type of discussion. And it did that. And it got almost everything. I've added one to the end for you on something in particular that has to do with Orange Man. Somebody was, by the way, very upset that I called Trump Orange Man. He calls himself Orange Man at times as a joke. He has a sense of humor. But he said, you shouldn't call the greatest president that ever was Orange Man. It's disrespectful. So I've made a promise to him. That I intend to keep, and I've started on it right now, that I will refer to Trump as Orange Man, because his name is Orange Man for some people, at least 50 times before the month ends. So there you go, friend. He probably won't hear it, because he's probably just a sniper that rolled by with a very popular episode yesterday. But that has nothing to do with Bitcoin. But Orange Man is involved with shitcoining, and this has brought up some questions about... Orange Man is the Orange President because he's a Bitcoin president, right? So this has brought up some questions that we will handle today, including about things like wrapped Bitcoin and what that is. I wanted to throw that in for you, but I also had some other things that I definitely wanted to cover for you today. So I'm just going to pull something up over here. Again, I am one-eyed. If you are on Rumble, I can see your comments. There's like 20-some people on Rumble that are not in the count over here on this side of the screen. So this is going pretty well for a new just started show. But it's really important if you're on Rumble and you comment that you put the word question in all caps if you want me to see it. So anyway, what I'm going to do, I'm going to read those questions. I then said, I want you to go back through them, ChatGPT, and give me your answer in 2 to 3 sentences each. And I'm going to read ChatGPT's answer, and I'm going to expand on it or tell you where I disagree. And that way you kind of get two different opinions, or maybe two different vantage points into each one of these questions. So the first question that came out of all this was, what is Bitcoin and why should someone new care about it? And I'm going to say right now, some of you guys are going to be like, I can answer this question myself. It's just for people that are trying to step into it, right? And for people that have stepped into Bit, and we will get into some advanced stuff, but I'll start out as easy as possible. This is what ChatGPT said. Bitcoin is a decentralized digital currency that allows peer-to-peer transactions without needing banks or intermediaries. It is valuable because it is scarce, secure, resistant to censorship, Bitcoin gives individuals financial sovereignty in a system not controlled by any government. That's a great answer. It also has words in there like decentralized intermediaries, and that may not really hit with everybody. The best way to understand Bitcoin is it is a way to store value and to exchange value such that no one can prevent you from holding it, keeping it. They can't take it from you, and they cannot prevent you from transferring to somebody else as long as you keep it in some form of self-custody, meaning you control it. If you have your Bitcoin sitting on any exchange, Swan, Gemini, Strike, anything like that, that is not true. Now, it's very rare that that actually becomes a problem. I've never heard of, you know, Strike or Swan telling someone you can't send your Bitcoin. But I'm going to tell you right now, if they got a letter from the United States government say, here's this person, here's their name, here's their social security number, and here's our authorization, when we tell you to freeze their accounts, they're going to do it just like your bank will. So if you have your Bitcoin on an exchange, think of it like keeping money in the bank. Yeah, you think that's secure, but it's not. When you send it to your own wallet, and we'll get into that later, where you control it, whether it's a software wallet, a hardware wallet, cold storage, at that point, all the risk is the security of the device itself that it's on and security of your information, like your seed phrase, which we'll get to later. But otherwise, no one can do anything about it. If you are holding Bitcoin on an exchange, somebody can do something about it. And the uncensorable and unseizable nature of it changes because it's not your Bitcoin. It's Bitcoin held by a custodian for you. That's how simple it is. Okay? Now, what I have to temper that with, if you have $500 on Strike or $500 even on Coinbase, which I'm going to say don't buy from, we'll talk about that later, or anywhere, I don't really care. It's $500. It's not earth-shattering. There's a point where you get to enough, and to me, that's $500, $1,000 in value. You offload it. You start stacking it again on that exchange, and when you get up to that number again, you offload it. Exactly how to do that, we'll talk about. But I'm not worried, because whenever I say this, I'm going to be, oh, I heard you say not to this, and I have my Bitcoin, and it's all on Coinbase. How much do you have? $231. I don't care. If it's an amount of money you would have put in your pocket in dollars, we'll get to you at UTXO management, right? If you would put it in your pocket in dollars and walk around with it and not freak out, I don't care that it's on an exchange. I really don't, okay? And we'll get to UTXO management. Be calm. It's okay. All right. Now, how do I get started buying Bitcoin for the first time? This is what ChatGPT says. Start by downloading a reputable exchange app like Strike or Cash App, create an account, link your bank, and purchase a small amount of Bitcoin to learn how it works. Always move slowly and never invest more than you can afford to lose. I actually completely agree with that, though I don't necessarily know that, depending on what you use, you need to download an app. There are some Bitcoin exchanges you can do everything on a computer, so if you're more comfortable sitting behind a computer using a full keyboard and using a browser, as long as you're not dumb with how you do that, go ahead. Now realize if somebody has hacked your computer and is key logging you, they get all your information. But that's true of a device too. So just know to use good, solid security protocols that you would use whenever you're accessing your bank account or something like that. Okay? Because it's the same exact type of risk. We're not going to get into personal nodes and cold wallets because this is for beginners. This is a beginners and intermediate show. We'll say a little bit about nodes eventually, but we're not going to get into how to be fucking Jason Bourne today. We're also not just for everybody else that's here all the time. If somebody in there starts asking about shitcoins, those of you who come to my show often and know about how I do Bitcoins and my opinion of shitcoins, you handle those people for me, because I'm not even going to comment on somebody's, but what about Ripple? But what about this? But no, this is a Bitcoin show. All right. This is where I want to give my anti-Coinbase, because I've been semi-pro-Coinbase for a long time. I think everybody probably should have a Coinbase account. And it probably wouldn't be a bad idea to buy a little bit of Bitcoin with Coinbase and do a withdrawal, because the first time you go to withdraw from Coinbase, they're going to hold your Bitcoin hostage. They're going to make sure you're not stealing it, that somebody didn't get your account information, log in and try to steal your Bitcoin. And once you've done it a couple times, it's not going to be so much of a problem anymore. The other reason I would recommend that you have a Coinbase account is if you need to move a large sum of Bitcoin into fiat at some point, it is one of the, once you're linked to a bank account, one of the most reliable ways to be able to do it. And I still say don't buy it there. And there's a couple reasons. One is you're just going to pay more for the same Bitcoin, which doesn't make any sense. One thing that you need to understand, you really need to understand about Bitcoin exchanges is it is not just the fees. It's something called the spread. So different exchanges will say that Bitcoin is trading at different amounts, and what you pay versus what actually is happening aggregated across all the exchanges is the spread. And the spread is always to the advantage of the house with Coinbase. The spread is big. If you're on Swan, right? If you're on Strike, hell, Cash App, Fold, the spread is small. So you get less sats for the same money. So go where the spread is small. The next is the fees. Coinbase has big fees when you buy and big fees when you transfer. So it's bullshit. TM Permaculture says Fold spread went to shit lately. There you go. Have more than one account so you can check spreads. My advice, though, if you're buying small amounts on a regular basis and you don't have any problems with linking your bank account, because that can happen, we'll get to that later, use Strike. There's no, if you go to DCA with Strike, dollar cost average, once you do a certain number of buys, you pay no fees, withdrawals jack shit low, and the spread is almost non-existent. I almost wish they were charging a little bit more for some of what they do because I worry they're not making enough money. But Jack Mahler says they're good. So, and Dowie says, for super beginner, Coinbase works, gateway exchange for normies. It looks like PayPal. It works like PayPal. And that makes it easy for people. But guess where you can buy Bitcoin? In PayPal. And you can take custody. Now, here's the problem with me recommending PayPal for that. I have no idea what the spread is. I have no idea what the fees are, right? And I have no idea what withdrawal fees are. And the reason for that is if I log in my PayPal account, I can't buy Bitcoin. Because for some retarded reason, if your PayPal account is a business account, you can't buy and trade Bitcoin in PayPal. I don't care where you buy your Bitcoin. Somebody said about Robinhood. I don't use Robinhood, so I don't know what the spread, the fees, and the terms are. Okay. Look at the spread, the fee, and the terms. And if it works for you, it works for you. I don't care where you buy it, okay? As long as it's legitimate. If it's like, you know, the Joe Smoothie Bitcoin Exchange dot, you know, India, and you buy it there, you're probably going to have your money disappear. If it is a legitimate exchange, I don't give the square root of F all where you buy it, as long as you have a point at which you say, this is enough on the exchange. I'm moving it to self-custody. Okay? And Ben Yoba says Robinhood is terrible. And they may be. And they may not be. And he may have had a bad experience because he didn't get approved for a bank link or something. I have no idea. You have to make that call yourself. All I can tell you is that I have used Strike a lot and I like it. I have used Swan a lot and I like it. I've heard great things about River. And I think River can be your whole bank plus Bitcoin, and that's great, but I don't know enough to specifically recommend it, okay? I don't know enough to specifically recommend it. All I can tell you is these are all legitimate institutions, and if you buy it there, they're not going to steal your money. But when you leave Bitcoin on an exchange, right, and you leave it there, you are subject to possibly being confiscated for whatever reason. Your name got confused with somebody else's name by some bureaucrat somewhere who owes taxes. And you didn't even do anything wrong. Understand what I'm saying? The fact that you can self-custody is what makes Bitcoin the superpower that it really is. And it's not hard. We'll get more into that. What is dollar cost averaging and why is it recommended for beginners? DCA, where dollar cost averaging is the practice of buying a fixed amount of Bitcoin on a regular schedule, like weekly or monthly. It reduces the impact of market volatility and simplifies investing. Beginners benefit from DCA because it removes the need to time the market. What I actually think is it removes your ability to screw yourself by thinking you can time the market with Bitcoin. I have actually gone, I do a $5 everyday DCA, and I will tell you that I buy more than that, and I make a buy weekly as well. I have been doing a $5 DCA with Strike and putting out a screenshot of every day since sometime in December. And I've been doing that so I can stop hearing people say, but I can't afford it. Do you drink Starbucks coffee? Yeah, well, go get yourself an AeroPress, make your own coffee, and spend $5 a day on Bitcoin. Or don't. And then HFSP. And somebody in the chat can tell you what that means if you don't know. HFSP. That's what I'll say. If you can't do that much. And if you can't do that much for whatever, I don't have it. Okay. Do $60 a month. That's $2 a day. The beauty of a daily DCA is you're bouncing all over with the volatility, lowering your aggregate buy-in. Let's say you do a monthly DCA of $60, $100. What I'm doing is $150 a month. All right. It's your retirement. It's part of your retirement. If you're not saving at least that much for your retirement, work harder, get a better job, and lean out your budget because you need to be, because it's going to be expensive to retire. And the longer it is till you retire, the more money you're going to need. But that, you know, it's $150 a month. But let's say that I set my $150 monthly buy for the first of every month. There's a good chance I'm going to hit an absolute spike in price when that DCA goes through that I'm not even going to be thinking about, because that's the beauty of DCA. Okay. But the other beauty of DCA is, since I don't have to think about it, I'm not sitting here going, well, is now the right time to buy? Like, is it going to go down another $5? It's just all bullshit. In the end, all you're going to care about is how much you have. Right? You're not going to be like, I remember back in August of 2021, I bought $50 worth of Bitcoin, and it was at like 19,000. And if I had waited another hour, I could have got it at 18. Come on. Come on. Don't do this to yourself. And somebody's saying Vinyoba is giving the reason for why they don't like it. It's a ridiculous markup. That's the spread. And I'm going to show you that later, how there's certain ways that, like, it's easy to buy Bitcoin, but maybe you shouldn't. With something like Primal, with its native wallet, and it's through Strike, and you're going to get, for a $5 purchase, about 800 less sats. It's not huge, but it's a difference you don't have to pay. So why do it? Anyway. But DCA, the beauty of that is you don't think about it. It just happens. So what I would advise anybody to do, if you have a Strike account and you're approved and you know I want to buy X per month, take that number, divide it by 30. It will average out because some months have 30 and some have 31 and February is 28 and whatever. And you might have to throw a little more in for months with 31, whatever, add $5 to it. And divide it by 30, and then make that number your daily DCA buy. You can buy a dollar a day. You can buy a dollar a day. And if you do it for, I think it's like 5 days in a row, your fee is, until you cancel that DCA and start a new one, your fees go away. You pay no fees. So if you're going to do $30 a month, you're better off doing a dollar a day. I really, especially you small incremental buyers. And DCA is good for everyone. I just had somebody, they have $150,000 they want to put into Bitcoin. And they said, what should I do? I said, you should set up an account with Swan. That's enough money. You qualify, way qualify for Swan Private. You should get in touch with them, and you should set up a, you should deposit your money and set up a recurring buy on a specific frequency that you need to figure out with your money, because that's like a lot of money, and I'm not your financial advisor. But I would never throw $150,000 lump sum into Bitcoin. I'm not Michael Saylor, and neither are you. I'm not buying it with other people's money. I'm not taking like $1 million out of my $4 billion that I don't need. Like, to me and you, that's like $100. That's not what we're doing. And I would definitely move in over time. And then I might have some dry powder too. And if there's a big dip, that's when I might say, okay, let's throw another 10 grand at it or something like that. But for the average person, DCA, and this is what I'm going to tell you, this is hard to admit, because I had some really big wins with trades. Back in the days when I was still trading shitcoins, I even put some, like, I was throwing screenshots and showing, look, I took $1,000 and by the end of the week I had 7,000 and turned it all into Bitcoin and put it away. But you know what you don't show when you lose, or when you did it and then you converted it, and then you waited to go back in, and you didn't really lose, but you ended up with less than you started with anyway. Like, the money's more, but the sats are lower. That's not good. If I had honestly, from the time I started telling you this, done a $5 daily buy from 2013 to now, I don't know if maybe I'd be doing two shows a week. Okay? Right? Like, I'm just being honest with you that the best course of action is trickle money in over the long term and don't touch it. Okay? And the beauty is you won't pay any taxes. We got some tax stuff later. Why is Bitcoin still valuable even if the store I shop at doesn't accept it? Is gold valuable? Is gold valuable? If I gave you a pound of gold, would you say, I don't want that shit, the store doesn't take it? Do you see what I'm saying? Because somebody else will. Because it can be converted into fiat for now. Because you're not trying to go to the store. Like, the people that make up this shit about, the reason that this shit coin is better is because you can buy a coffee and a scone with it. I've never met a person in my life like, man, bro, I've been trying all day long to find a place to buy a coffee and a scone for Bitcoin, and I can't find one. It's just not the thing that you need to be looking at this point. The reason stores don't take Bitcoin is because it's a tax and accounting pain in the ass. The only way I, as a merchant that has a revolving cash flow, can take a volatile asset is it must immediately convert to dollars. That's where things like Strike come in. If you want to spend your Bitcoin, you Strike. And it doesn't matter that the merchant's like, but I don't, here's dollars, boom, done. You can send Bitcoin and the person on the other end of the transaction receives dollars. So that's how you would do that if you needed to. Bitcoin has value because it's a absolutely, like we started out with, it's absolutely secure. It's uncensorable. No one can seize it from you. No one can prevent you from transferring it to a counterparty. Period. It's absolutely secure. And when you receive Bitcoin, you know what you have. If it says you just got 25,000 sats, you got 25,000 sats. And even though you have to wait 10 minutes for the final confirmation, when it shows, has anybody here ever gotten a confirmation in their wallet that it was coming and that it didn't ever? I mean, it may have happened. It's never happened to me. And I've been doing this for 12 years. When I see it show up in my wallet that transaction is processing, I don't worry about it anymore. It is the most secure network that humans have ever created. I'll also put it this way. When you hear people like Jamie Dimon or what's her name, Janet Yellen or Jerome Powell or anybody talk about how they don't like it and it doesn't have intrinsic value, my brother, my sister, you, Jerome Powell, you, freaking Jamie Dimon, you, all of you peoples, all you banksters, all you oligarchs, all you bureaucrats, all you people with all the power and money that hate it, and you can't do anything about the fact that you hate it except sit there and cry harder, you are the intrinsic value. The fact we have created a way to store and manage and transfer wealth that the people that hate it the most, that are the wealthiest, the most powerful people in the world can't stop, that's its value. And this is done by hundreds of thousands of people around the world running nodes and running mining rigs, securing and stabilizing the network. And there's nothing they can do. And now it's in ETFs. It's in the retirement accounts of firefighters and cops and, you know, city employees and state employees. Like, it's in the retirement accounts of fucking teachers. And you will fuck with an Indian reservation before you fuck with the retirement of a teacher. That's where its value really comes from. What's the difference between a Bitcoin wallet and an exchange like Coinbase? ChatGPT says an exchange is a platform for buying, selling, and holding Bitcoin, but it retains control of your funds. A Bitcoin wallet gives you full ownership and control of your Bitcoin, not your keys, not your coins, is a key principle for safety. That I already basically said this. If your Bitcoin is sitting on an exchange, I don't care how ethical that exchange is. Like, one problem with Bitcoin on Coinbase is this is a shitcoin casino. There's not a shitcoin I'm aware of you can't buy on Coinbase. And they're constantly marketing the shitcoins to you, Solana or whatever, right? Like, you don't really need all that. And it's just noise and background distraction. But if it's like, I got to tell you, Strike and Swan to me, and I keep hearing really great things about River. I just haven't touched it yet. Are incredibly moral companies. They are Bitcoin only. They encourage self-custody. They help you with it. If you need help with self-custody, they're great. Okay. But if they get a letter from the government that says, Texas Plant Company, whatever your real name is, right, owes us money in taxes. There's a lien on his property, whatever. We freeze his account. They're going to freeze it. Once you've taken it off, that's off the table. You own it. Think of it this way. You have $1,000 in a bank account, or you go to the bank, they give you $1,000 bills, you put them in a fire safe, and you store that in a hole in the floor of your home. It's the same thing. When you hear Bitcoin was hacked, no, it wasn't. No one has ever hacked Bitcoin. They've hacked people because you're stupid and you put your seed phrase in a text file on your desktop. That'll get you hacked, right? That's hacking your computer, not Bitcoin, okay? But what usually it means is someone got into the database of an exchange and cleared out accounts, not your Bitcoin that you held because you never held it. It's not yours. Just think of it, bank account versus you have cash in hand. Okay, you have a safe deposit box with 1,000 ounces of silver in it. Nice thing to have. Nothing wrong with it until, thanks to the Patriot Act, a safe deposit box is now a financial relationship. And if something comes up about you, like, I don't know, your state decides you owe income tax that you don't really owe, but they decide they're going to shake you out, they'll put a freeze on it. You can't get in your own safe deposit box. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. Self-custody is a way. I have a whole article on how to do it. I'll add it to the show notes for you after we're wrapped up today. Should I leave my Bitcoin on an exchange or move it to a wallet? For small amounts, this is ChatGPT's answer. Leaving Bitcoin on a reputable exchange is fine initially. However, for long-term holding or larger amounts, it's safer to move it to your wallet. You control. This ensures your Bitcoin isn't at risk if the exchange is hacked, if the exchange fails, if the exchange lies, or if the government tells the exchange to take your fucking money. Because let me tell you another thing that can happen that we don't know. There's no way to verify this. Does the exchange have the Bitcoin they say that they have? Or do they have an equivalent amount of an amalgamation of shitcoins they're issuing Bitcoin credits against, and only when you take self-custody do they generate enough Bitcoin to cover the spread? You don't know. Think of it like a bank run. This can happen to exchanges. It has. Do they have the Bitcoin, but they have it in wrapped Bitcoin, and they've leveraged it against debt, and if it starts to get wiped out, they can't cover all – here's my big question, and there's no way to know this. There's no way to know this. If every single person doing business with that exchange, no matter who they are, said in one day, I want all my Bitcoin, do they have enough to cover it? You just don't know. I'd like to believe, especially, you know, a Swan or a Strike or what have you does, but I can't prove it. I am much more confident that BlackRock has one Bitcoin for every Bitcoin in their ETFs because we have a public listing of, because it's a public offering, we know exactly how much is in the market and we know exactly what addresses it's held on, and we can do our own balancing because it's a public ledger. Show me where I can do that with Coinbase. You say, well, we do know these addresses are Coinbase addresses, and Coinbase has at least as much Bitcoin. But how much is being held on Coinbase? I don't know, and neither do you. And in what form is that Bitcoin that's an address that's associated with Coinbase? Is there a smart contract against it? I don't know. Probably not, but I don't have time to be researching this shit. So as long as I'm only risking $500, $1,000, maybe $1,500 on any exchange at any given time, I don't really care because – I have already raked out the majority of my holdings, and I do it constantly. I'm like, yeah, that's like $1,100. Let me take $1,000 off. Okay. What is cold storage, and how can I safely store Bitcoin offline? Cold storage means keeping Bitcoin in a wallet that isn't connected to the internet, like a hardware wallet. Devices like Ledger, do not recommend them, or Trezor are popular options. This protects your Bitcoin from hacks and online threats. I do like the Trezor. I like the Trezor Model T. There are many good hardware wallets. You do not need to buy this because I said I like it. This is my issue with recommending products. Jack Spirico is not your tech support department. You can, there are hardware wallets that I have a high opinion of because of what other people think, but I've never used them, so I don't know what their customer support is. I know if you have a problem with your Trezor, that you can contact Trezor, and unless you've done something stupid like lost your seed phrase and can't recover it and can't get into your wallet, but if you have basic use questions, how do I? They have good customer support. And it pairs with Exodus. It pairs with other software wallets too, but Exodus, even though they have the ability to hold and buy and trade shitcoins, has excellent customer support too. You can contact Exodus and they will help you. That means I don't have to and you don't expect me to because I recommended the product. So that's why those are kind of my go-to recommendations for hardware and software wallets. The thing you need to know about something like the Model T, though, is there's a lot of updates. They stay up to date. They do a really good job. And what that means is even if you keep this like you should in like a fire safe or something, I have to get mine out when I'm going to show it to you. You need to get it out at least once a month. You need to plug it in and sync it with your software wallet because it will use a software wallet of some form. And so you need to make sure that you keep it current. That's really important with the Trezor Model T. There may be some other hardware wallets where that's less important. I don't know that. I'm just telling you about this one. In the video notes, I have a link where you can buy this, okay, on Amazon. Don't buy it on Amazon. Don't buy it from anybody except Trezor directly on Amazon. Never buy a hardware wallet or any Bitcoin hardware of any kind from anybody except the manufacturer themselves. The links I have go to where you're buying it directly from Trezor. It will come with special seals on it. If those seals are broken, you'll know it. Only buy it and only use it, and you can always refresh it from the beginning. When you buy a Model T, it will come with nothing. The first thing you actually have to do is install the firmware. Don't worry, it's easy. But the whole point is you're getting the device, and you can do that and wipe it and do it again if you want to be that secure. But you need a hardware wallet once you get into the range of, let's say, $5,000. That's kind of where I'm okay with. I want you to think of each form of custody off an exchange as an insurance policy, okay? The big thing about a hardware wallet is right now you can't hack this. Look, I'm almost plugging it in. Oh, that's not plugged in. You can't get in. You see? You can't access the information that's in here. This is a signing device. It's important to understand. There's no Bitcoin in here. There's no Bitcoin in here. There's no Bitcoin in your Exodus wallet. There's no Bitcoin in anybody's wallet. Wallet is a terrible, terrible, terrible name. We're stuck with it. It's an access device. Your Bitcoin is always in the blockchain. You just have a claim to it via a signing device that makes you not have to type in a giant string of things for each one of your key pairs to make it go somewhere and move it or secure it or what have you. Because it's not plugged in, because it's not connected, there's no Wi-Fi connection off of this, right? The addresses in it can receive Bitcoin without being plugged in, and when I plug it in, I'll see it. If I open Exodus and look at it without it attached, I can see all the money that's held by the Trezor, including things I've received since the last time I plugged it in. I just can't send it. I can look at it, I can see it, and I can receive, but I can't send. That's your protection. Lose it, you have a problem. It comes with a seed phrase. You need to back it up. I have a link in the notes down there. You can buy just this for about $100. You can also, if you already have one, Trezor makes a pretty cool backup tool for your seed phrase to store it. It's metal and it uses a punch. And you can look at it yourself if you want to. But your seed phrase will be 12 words, 16 words, depending on what you're using and what your options are. And each one of those words, it's really only the first four letters that matter. So there's 2,800 words or something like that that are available to make these seed phrases from. And none of them have the same four first letters. Those four letters represent four numbers. 12 times, it's a big string. It's an impossible thing to crack because the amount of energy would have to go for one address has one or there's a seed phrase for the whole wallet. I'm in a different place there. Forget what I just said. But you, it's like picking an atom, one atom out of the known universe, and it being the right atom. That's how hard it is. That's the math behind it. But if you lose it, you have a problem. So you need to make, and the beautiful thing about Trezor, when you set it up, it will make sure you did it. You will have to put, you have to say, this is the seed phrase back to it. It'll check you and make sure you did it, because if you don't, no one can help you. The beauty of self-custody is no one can take it, no one can access it, but that means you're responsible for it. Okay. Again, if you have questions, I don't have hardly any questions now. They need to have the question or question in all caps. If you're just talking, I assume you're talking to other people, not me. Okay. But I have a lot of people that ask me, well, should I just simply take this old laptop, stick Exodus or something, you know, Coinami, whatever, you know, wallet on it, and have it to where, let's say, it doesn't have a Wi-Fi card, disable a Wi-Fi card, RJ45, and when I want to use it, I have to actually plug it in to my router, right? Or I can just switch off the Wi-Fi, shut down the computer, and store it securely, and then I have cold storage. You have cold storage. This is my thing when people do that. Okay. A properly made, secure device that is constantly updated by the manufacturer with a secure seed phrase that does exactly what it's supposed to do, that's made for the purpose, is $100. If you're using an old device, I assume that old device is not really, you know, optimum anymore. There's a reason you retired it. So now you're trusting your security to a device that's faulty in some way, aged in some way. So maybe that's not the best idea. You also have something much bigger to secure and much more at risk to damage. Now, as long as you back up your seed phrase, you can always restore it, right? You can always restore it. But if you lose it, it's gone. And I don't see, you know, using some old phone that may one day I try to turn it on not work is a better alternative than this. Okay? And it's a lot more likely that it could end up somebody breaking into it. There's something you need to know about this. To use it, for me personally, I have a password-protected Exodus wallet. And then I have a PIN number to go in here. And you have to enter that PIN number, and you have to use the password for the software side. So you need two, well, I need, it's almost like a two-factor in of itself, okay? But there's another level of security that comes with these that I really like. You know, when you go to put your PIN number in on a phone, you can almost do it without looking because it's laid out a certain way. You've done it so many times. Well, that means it can be keylogged just by location. You know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 0 in the center, right? What this does is every time you plug it in, it brings those numbers up sorted. So there's no pattern that can be discerned by somebody that would have to actually be able to get enough hacked in when you plugged it in to actually see the numbers, not just the location, which means you really need to look at it because an 8 and a 0 look a lot alike. And I think you get 14 or 16 attempts for it to lock. And if it locks, I really don't know what happens. So that's just another thing to know about that. What should I do to secure my Bitcoin keys and seed phrases? Let's see what ChatGPT gave us for an answer to that. Write down your seed phrase or your recovery phrase on paper and store it in a safe, secure location. Never trust it or store it digitally to avoid hacking risk. Consider having multiple backups in different locations for added safety. And I'll give you some additional things you could do. One thing you could do is, let's say that you wanted to make sure that your son, if you died, or like, let's say my wife and I die in a car wreck, we have a way to make sure my son can get access to this. You could simply make sure they know where to go and how to get into, let's say, a strong box or something like that in the event of your death. But I don't know, maybe your son's a dirtbag on drugs and he could break in your house. So there's ways beyond this, but you could also have like half the phrase already in possession of somebody and then they need the other half of it. There's a lot of ways to do that, but the big thing is to make sure that you have it, you can get it, and you have a plan if something horrible happens to you, like a traumatic brain injury or you die, that someone else somewhere can get to it, even if maybe that would require a third party that will release the information when it's confirmed that your wishes are being followed, okay? This is a conversation to have with someone who is a tax attorney and an estate planning attorney, right? This is like, those are the types of things. That is not for me to tell you what to do with handling your inheritance. What I will tell you, though, is it makes a lot of sense for your seed phrase to exist on something that makes it less likely to be destroyed. So metal is the way, and there are there's all kinds of ways. If you go backup seed storage on Amazon, you'll find dozens of products. There's no security risk to them unless it says, enter your seed phrase here. We'll custom print and mail it to you. If you do that, you will deserve what's about to happen to you. Don't fall for crap like that. What you'll get is there'll be some way for you to do it once you get it. The one that I have down in the notes down here is basically a cylinder, and it goes inside another cylinder and has a tamper-resistant sticker that will tell you if somebody pulled it open. So you'll know, and you can do something about it, okay? And it works by it has each word has a little grid, and then you make permanent marks in it. You can use, if you have punch tools that do letters and numbers and whatever, you can make them on washers, put them on a bolt. And I actually have some material for how to do that, and I will make that part of the notes as well for you. But some way, if you have it stamped in metal, you're not going to lose it. Another thing that I've seen people do is they'll record their seed phrase missing one word, and that word's either at the beginning or the end, and then they have a different place that last word is stored, including in their head. Do not rely on your head. I do not care. I do not care. I do not care how good your memory is. You could get hit in the head with something tomorrow and or die. Somebody needs to be able to recover that if you can't. But this insurance there would be like a multi-sig light where you just have one of the words missing. And, you know, is it at the end or the beginning or is it in the center? You know, the more complex you make it, the more secure and the more potential for problems. There's also something called multi-signature, and that's a bit advanced for today, but it would work like this. You don't have a phrase, you have three. And you need two of the three to access the Bitcoin, okay? To back it up, to restore it to another wallet. And I'm going to talk about that here in a second because we skipped over it and we need to talk about that. But what that would mean is I could say to my son Matthew, Matthew, here is the seed phrase and here's instructions of what to do. And I'm using, you know, this third-party service as a multi-sig. If I die, all they'll be able to give you is one key phrase, but you have the other, so it's like a nuclear launch. Both keys, same time, launch, okay? That's a great thing to use for estate planning or as a backup because now I can store two of my seed phrases in two totally different places. Somebody breaks and steals it, hits me with a wrench until I give it to them, whatever. They can run off with it. They can't do anything with it. They can't do anything with it. And I can go get the other one, and I can go back to you know, whoever's doing my custody of my key for me, and I can say, I need my other key, and here, I'm proved that I am who I say I am, and well, they'll give it to me. And that way, I can keep two separated. I can always access, and, you know, when people say, like, well, then what's going to happen is they're going to steal it from you. But they can't. They have one, and you need two. Got it? There's even people that do IRAs that way, where you're custodying, but you still have multi-sig, and that way you have backup and redundancy for inheritance. How do I avoid scams like send me Bitcoin and I'll send back more? Don't do it. Let's see what ChatGPT says. An offer sounds too good to be true. It probably is. Never send Bitcoin to strangers or giveaways or double check any links or requests. Stick to trusted platforms and avoid responding to unsolicited messages. Some of this shit is pretty sophisticated, especially for the stupid. And what I mean by that is you will actually sometimes see people take something like an interview with Michael Saylor or Elon Musk or whatever, and it's a pre-recording, but it looks like it's live. It'll say live, and all they're doing is they're streaming it. Like, I'm on StreamYard right now. I could have pre-recorded all this, and you wouldn't know it. I could have just created a stream, said, use this file, and pushed a button. I could even sit back here, and I could even pretend that I'm answering your questions like this one Stan just sent in, right? and I could be communicating with you in text, but it's really an old video. So I can take a video from anybody, and they'll put QR codes in it, and it'll be like, Elon Musk is doing this thing, and if you send him X amount of Bitcoin, he'll send you double that in Ethereum or something. And there's a QR code, and it's live, and it's all bullshit. It happens all the time. There is nobody that is going to do this. There is no place to stick your money. If you deposit Bitcoin, you'll earn 3% a day or something. No, it's all bullshit. Stay away from it. Do not touch it. It's beyond what we're talking about today, except that your Bitcoin is your Bitcoin. You don't give it to anybody. Bitcoin loans and shit, we'll talk about another episode in the future. I'll maybe talk a little bit about it today because there's some relevance to it. And basically, don't do this. But yeah, should I buy novelty coins like Trump and Melania coin? Let's see what ChatGPT said. No, these are gimmicks and have no real value as an investment. Focus on Bitcoin as it's the most secure and widely adopted cryptocurrency. Novelty coins are often speculative and prone to scams. Agreed. Don't buy anybody's fucking shitcoin. And let me put it a different way. If you want to buy shitcoins, you're a grown-ass man or woman. You do whatever you want. And when you get rugged, don't cry to me. I don't give a shit. I told you not to do it. That's where I am with it. I used to feel that there would be some other coin, some other alt technology, some other crypto that would have some utility that Bitcoin can't do, and it would have value. And I have run out of ways to explain that. About the only thing that I see any utility in that's not Bitcoin that is a crypto is Monero for private transactions, 100% private, which again, as I keep saying, it's only as private as your security practices on your device and the counterparty security on their device. Like, you can't see the transaction. That's okay. I have a screenshot of you sending it, and I have a screenshot of him getting it. You understand? Okay? So you have to have really good security for that to work. Take all this Jason Bourne, you know, money laundering bullshit and just get it out of your head. And we're going to talk a little bit about retirement with this and tax consequences later. So I'm going to basically say stop thinking you can get away with it because you can't. That's not what this is. That's not what this is. Thanks for handling that, Axnoro. Thank you. Because, yeah, it's a shitcoin. I don't care. My thoughts on anything you're going to ask about other than Bitcoin is that's a shitcoin. Don't spend your money on it. It's gambling. Okay? JK says shitcoins are a great way to get rich or wrecked. LOL. Well, I could buy this and it could triple in value. And you could go to the fucking 7-Eleven and give them $5 and get a scratcher and have 4 sevens and get $1 million. But you're probably not gonna. If you want safe, secure wealth storage, you want and wealth growth, you want Bitcoin. What's the yield? If you have an asset that gave you 107% return over the last 12 months and you ask me what the yield is, I realize I'm talking to a moron and I don't want to talk to you anymore. Because if you can make 100% per annum, which, by the way, is conservative for Bitcoin across, you know, 10 years, and you want your yield, I don't want to talk to you anymore. So no shit coins. How can my family access my Bitcoin if something happens to me? Set up a clear estate plan that includes instructions for accessing your Bitcoin. Share your wallet seed phrase or access details with trusted family members. Consider using a multi-sig wallet for additional security and planning. That may sound a little confusing, except it shouldn't if you've listened to the whole episode now, because we've covered most of this. Again, multi-sig is a 2 of 3. There's actually ones that are like 3 of 4. Like, it can be as complex as you want to make it. It's probably unnecessary. As far as estate planning, this is what my lawyer told me about my Bitcoin. Until you are in the range of exceeding what is exempt as inheritance, don't even put it in your will. Just put that everything goes to these people. And then tell these people how to get it. And don't tell me how to get it, so I don't know. So I think it's about how you want to handle it. You want to put it in a trust and have some control over what happens to it when it's distributed. These are all tax professional and estate planning professional and lawyer questions that are unique to every single individual is going to be a little bit different, right? Who are you? You know who I'm leaving it to? My son. My son gets everything if my wife and I kick off at the same time. That makes it pretty simple. Am I dividing it up against, like if I had 12 children, I might think a little bit differently about how I handle it. But it is imperative that you simply make sure that somebody somewhere in the event of your death can access it. So that might be a good idea to go over things with somebody and explain to them how to do it. And it could be as simple as this is a key to this box and you don't have the key to the box. So this is how you're going to get the key if I'm dead. Like, do you trust your family? I can't answer that for you. But make sure somebody can get to it, that there's some process in place for that to happen. What steps do I take to transfer Bitcoin from a deceased spouse wallet to my own? Okay. Locate the seed phrase, recovery phrase, or exchange login of the deceased wallet. Use the information to access the funds and transfer them to your wallet. If it's on an exchange, contact the support team for assistance with this process. Man, I'm going to tell you this is something you should have. You should have a open-ended, what's the word for it, where you have, like, you can act as somebody else. I can't think of what it's called right now. It just went out of my head. Somebody help me out here. Like, you get this so, like, if you're deployed in the military, your spouse can access your bank accounts. Or if you're late, not a delegate, there's a word for it, and it's just a phrase. Like, power of attorney, fuck, why couldn't I remember that? Holy shit, thanks, guys. A bunch of people came in with it. Power of attorney. You should have a power of attorney. Technically, it will kick in if you die, but you don't know what some exchange or something's going to say about it. Like, this person's dead. I'm their heir. I have a power of attorney, right? Like, and you got to be careful. A limited power of attorney specifies is under what circumstances that you can do things as that person. If you don't have it on the exchange in the first place, it won't matter. So the person that asked this question, I got some clarifying stuff with them in Telegram today. And this basically is a person they know. The one spouse died, the other spouse doesn't have it. The money's on Coinbase. You probably, it's not trustee, it's a power of attorney, is what I was looking for. You probably don't need to do anything if you have that person's login and information on Coinbase. You just log in and send it somewhere else. You have your own wallet, take self-custody. Your spouse didn't have self-custody for whatever reason. You put an address and you send it. Now, how much is there? If there's $200,000, there may be some alarm bells that go off as you start withdrawing it. Another reason I don't like Coinbase, okay? Because they'll let you accumulate that much and never say a word about it. They love when you keep your Bitcoin there, which is another reason I suspect they don't have the Bitcoin they say they do, okay? I'm not saying they don't. I'm just saying I don't believe that they do, okay? There's no way I can prove that, and I can't prove that they do either. That's the problem. So you just send it to yourself. And that's where you might want to have some paperwork ready if they start asking what's going on. Well, Bill died, and I need the money now. Okay. If they have a wallet, it would be like, then you just take the wallet. You don't really need to do anything. You have, as long as you can access the wallet, you have it. You don't really, it doesn't, if I were to die, all Dorothy needs is the passcode for this. She has no need to move the money. It's here. It can be used for whatever she wants, whenever she decides she wants to use it. There's no reason for her to move this. Like, there's no need. If you possess this and the data access this, then you possess the Bitcoin. See how that is? And I think the only way this really becomes a problem is it's on an exchange. If it's already in a wallet, it's there. Now, let's say you had your hardware wallet. Maybe you have several of them. Because I'm going to tell you, if you have like $2 million of Bitcoin and it's all one on one hardware wallet, bro, no. You know, $2 million, I would say maybe you're looking at 8 of the damn things and dividing it up. There's a good tax reason for that. We won't get into today either with some new things that may be coming. What if the seed phrase is compromised? Send it back to the exchange. Just move it to another wallet. That's what you would do there. Just move it to another wallet with a different seed phrase. Some wallets you probably can change that, but I'm not sure on how you would do that in a lot of situations. Just move it to a different wallet, which is what you would do. I mean, if I thought that happened short term, I would just download something like Exodus as a software wallet and send all that shit there. because even the fees or whatever, like it's better than losing it all if you really believe it was compromised. Then you can set up a new, you can actually wipe that hardware wallet, reestablish a new seed phrase, and then put it back in. Builder said you can't change it, and that makes sense to me that you wouldn't be able to change it. What I meant more is with some wallets, you could probably actually, it's one device, and you can set up a second wallet and move it over on the same device. That's kind of what I'm saying there. But if somebody's dead, as long as you have access to it, you just send it wherever you want it to go. You don't need to do any paperwork for it, is what I'm getting at. It's a bearer asset. Let's look at it a different way. There used to be something called bearer bonds. And the most famous bearer bonds came from the Vatican. And if you had that bearer bond, you could go somewhere and it paid, you know, it had a face value and an interest rate. And if it was past maturity, it continued to accrue interest. And you could take that bearer bond and you could go to any place that would cash a bearer bond in and go, I want this. Give me money. And they would give you. Now, they got rid of this shit. There's still a few floating around here and there that have to be honored, but I don't know anybody issuing them anymore and haven't for a very long time. But if I had the bearer bond and I died and you were my wife, the transfer of custody is I'm dead. You pick it up. You have it. You have the bearer bond. That's how a Bitcoin is in self-custody. If you have the device and the information to access it, you have the Bitcoin. No one needs to know about it, especially if it's under the threshold for taxes for inheritance. And as far as I know, I don't know anywhere where there is a tax on anything that is left to a spouse. Children, there's an amount, a total amount and an individual amount. And if you're exceeding those, and you have a lot of money and you probably have good advisors in your life for finance and for legality. And if you have the kind of money where you will exceed the inheritance exemption and you are not managing your money with a trust, you don't have good advisors and you need new ones, because no decent advisor would let somebody with that much money not use the trust or group of trust for management. That's a different thing than we're talking about today. Is it worth getting out of a Bitcoin ETF and into actual Bitcoin, even with tax implications? Before I even read this, I'm going to tell you I disagree. I totally disagree, and I'll explain it after I do. ChatGPT says, yes, holding actual Bitcoin gives you full control and removes counterparty risk. I agree with that. Assess the tax costs carefully and plan a transition to minimize your liability. Owning Bitcoin directly also ensures you benefit from its core principles of sovereignty. I'm going to ask you, why do you have an ETF in the first place? And if your answer is the only good answer to that question, because my money is in an IRA, 401k, SEP, et cetera, 401(3b), whatever, with a brokerage option or whatever, and so I can't directly buy Bitcoin, and hence I bought the ETF to have Bitcoin exposure, and I can't self-custody because of the form that this money is in. Yes, I am fully aware I can go open up an IRA account right now and self-custody my Bitcoin. I get that. But Bill, who's working for Texas Instruments, who has $750,000 in his 401k and still working, can't. Not with that money. Not with that money. And the idea that you're going to get raped in the butt for the penalties to get that money out just to put it back into the same asset is stupid. It's different money in a different bucket, and it's managed differently. So if you went out and you bought an ETF with money that's not held hostage, you shouldn't have done it. And then I would take this advice with a grain of salt. There is a tax associated with selling it, right? Because it's at a gain now. It's gone up since you bought it. And you have to decide tax-wise where and how. And that's a conversation with your CPA. Okay. Now, if it's going to cost you $200, just do it. Right. If you're going to pay like $200 because it's a small amount of money, I don't know why you did what you did. Fine. But an ETF is for money that cannot otherwise access the asset the ETF holds, or for people who want to trade an asset that taking delivery of it doesn't make sense. That doesn't apply to Bitcoin, but ETFs for gold and silver, for a day trader, for a somebody, even not even a day trader, somebody who trades regularly, That's what you should use. That's what you should use. You're not going to make any money short-term trading silver or gold in physical metal. Go down to the coin shop because there's a spread. There's a bid and an ask. Like, and then you have to transport it. It sucks. In fact, that's part of why gold and silver failed in a modern world as monetary instruments, because they do not have the divisibility, scalability, and movability that you need from something to work in a world that's run by computers. They don't. They're not terrible. They are great for what they are, but they have a fundamental limitation. And if you wanted to rapidly trade, like, hey, gold is at $1,800 and I bought it for $1,200 and I think the top's in for this cycle and I want to sell it and buy it back when it goes down. I want to sell it at $1,800 and buy it back at $1,400. That's what an ETF's for. If you're doing that with Bitcoin, ETFs are actually a great way to go. I don't do it. I don't recommend it. But if you're going to do it anyway, I did my old mentor on snakes put it this way. The answer to how you don't get bit by a rattlesnake or a copperhead or a coral snake is simple. Don't fucking touch it. Don't work with them. There's 2,800 odd snakes in North America alone that can't hurt you. Play with those. But since I know you're going to do it anyway, let me tell you how to do it. That's how I look at ETFs and trading Bitcoin and stuff like that. If you're going to trade it, keep your fees as low as possible on the trading. And since like some of these ETFs are running like a quarter point, I don't know if a Bitcoin exchange is below that. For high volume, rapid trading, doesn't exist. I just recommend you don't do it. But that's what an ETF's for. And I would not take it in the shorts just to get money out of a 401k or IRA. But you may want to look at, is there a way to get it out without penalties or some portion of it? If you're doing a Roth, I will remind you. And this is where if you talk to your CPA or your tax planner or whatever, and they say, what I'm saying is wrong, you need a new one. If I have a 401k that's a Roth 401k, and my employer may have different rules, the plan provider may have different rules while I'm working. But if I were to roll that Roth into a Roth IRA, for instance, and I may be able to get it even while it's still 401k, again, but there's plan rules there beyond the government's rules. But let's say I had a job, I worked for this company for 10 years, I have 200 grand in my 401, it's a Roth 401, I get out and I roll it to a Roth IRA. It doesn't cost me anything to do that. I can do that very simply. Now, if I go back and I look and I contributed $50,000 of that $200,000, I can take all $50,000 of that out of the Roth and I can invest it in Bitcoin or anything else I want to do and pay no penalties because it's already been taxed. However, I still wouldn't fucking do it. That money was put in that form of an investment for a reason, and it is tax-free forever. It is tax-free forever. So let's imagine that I'm old like I am, and I am, and I have some conventional IRAs, I have some Roth IRAs, and I have Bitcoin cold storage. And I hit retirement, and I'm going to start pulling from those. I'm going to pull from the conventional IRA first. I'm going to pull from there first. I'm going to pull from the Roth second, and I'm going to pull from my Bitcoin stack third in my retirement because of the tax consequences of each and the way that they're each handled. I'm going to pay tax on the 401k money that I withdraw that's the old shit, the conventional, like it's income because it was tax deferred. When I take money out of my Roth, I'm never going to pay taxes. So people are like, well, why don't you take that first? Because it will keep growing while I'm living off the first bucket. And the Bitcoin should exceed the others. If I already have money, I want Bitcoin and it's already in a 401k, I am probably going to leave it there because I will be able to take the profits at some point tax-free if it's a Roth. But it's not real Bitcoin. It's different money managed in a different way. It's a different bucket your money's held in. You're going to give up the tax advantages that you already have. Why would you do that? Because BlackRock's going to rug us. You don't know how ETFs work and you need to learn and you need to stop bothering people like me if you feel that way. I'm sorry. This does not mean that new money that goes into Bitcoin should go in there. By all means, the best form of Bitcoin is Bitcoin you self-custody. Different money, different rules, different purposes, different planning. I'm assuming you're a grown-up boy or girl and you knew why you opened up a 401k in the first place, and you have a plan for your retirement, and that is a piece of the plan. What is a Lightning wallet, and how is it different than a regular wallet? A Lightning wallet is used for fast, low-cost Bitcoin transactions on a Lightning network. A regular wallet is for standard Bitcoin transactions, which can be slower and more expensive. Lightning wallets are ideal for small payments and microtransactions. I don't have to add much. I'll just say that Lightning works way different. Every sat that's on the Lightning network is secured by on-chain Bitcoin. There's a balance, a one-to-one balance. And there's a lot to Lightning, but it is the easy way for me to explain it to a new person is it is pocket money, right? It is money that you're not worried about losing. It's money that you kind of treat it like you do Bitcoin on an exchange, right? And we use it on Nostr all the time. We use it, you know, I use Primal as my client, and that means I see somebody makes a post and I say, here's 55 sats. It's like a nickel. And they're and like, yeah, I got some, and I post something, they like it. And, you know, sometimes I do a post, I make 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 sats on a post. Low cost purchases, things like that is what Lightning works really well for. It also is the heart that drives applications like Strike that allows this conversion of Bitcoin to dollars or dollars to Bitcoin during the transaction itself with final settlement on the other end. It is something that most people don't really need to worry about. If all you want to do is hold Bitcoin long term, having a Lightning wallet won't help you. It is a spending and receiving tool. And it makes a lot of sense if you sell low-cost items to people that want to spend Bitcoin and you want to accept Bitcoin. My real view, though, until they change the tax rules to something that makes any kind of sense, because right now it doesn't. If you want Bitcoin, sell shit for dollars and take the surplus capital, buy Bitcoin, and put it in cold storage. You will be much better off. But I love people getting into Lightning for things like value-for-value exchange on Nostr. And if you want to do that, the easiest thing you can do, if you're an iOS user anyway, and I don't know about Android, so, you know, Galaxies and whatever, so somebody else maybe here can say how it works there. But with Primal on iOS, you have a native wallet that works straight out of the gate. You don't have to do anything. And it's actually powered by Strike. Okay. How do I get started with the Lightning Network to use or to earn Bitcoin? Download a Lightning-enabled wallet like MUN or Phoenix. Start by transferring a small amount of Bitcoin to fund your Lightning wallet. Look for platforms or services like Nostr that allow you to earn Bitcoin through Lightning transactions. I won't add anything to that because Lightning is too complex to really dig into for today's show. Should I invest in a dedicated device like a hardware wallet or laptop for Bitcoin storage? I kind of already covered that one, but it says if you're holding a significant amount of Bitcoin, a hardware wallet is a worthwhile investment. A dedicated laptop may also add extra security for advanced users. For most people, a hardware wallet like Trezor suffices. And I agree with that. Like I said, if you're using a internet-disabled device that you can then turn on or plug in, the problem is why are you using that device? Why is it relegated to that status? Is it something that is long-term healthy? A lot of older computers, you know, if you don't keep the OS updated, they have significant security risk. So, yeah, maybe it's only at risk when you use it, but maybe it's at more risk when you use it than something that's well-maintained. I would just get a hardware wallet. How do I mitigate the risk of self-custody, especially with significant amounts of Bitcoin? Use a multi-sig wallet or add an extra layer of security for large holdings. Store your seed phrase in multiple secure locations and consider professional custody services if you're not confident in managing it for yourself. Always have a clear recovery plan. We kind of talked about this already. There are people that are just terrified they'll lose their seed phrase. And then, you know, your other option is honestly to hold on exchange. And I think the risk of that exceeds the risk of a well-managed seed phrase. Is it really impossible for you? Because it's like, this is what the exchanges are trying to sell. Like, think about this, okay? Exchanges, again, not Swan, not Strike, but many exchanges, especially the ones that deal in a lot of shit coins, they're literally trying to scare users right now. But what if you lose your seed phrase? But what if you lose your seed phrase? Write it down four times and put a copy in four different places. For fuck's sake, you're a grown-ass man. You should be able to do this, right? Make sure that you have somebody in your life you can trust with where it is and own it, right? And if you're really not comfortable with it, I'm going to tell you that you probably are better off with an ETF than an exchange. Honest to God. Because then you have the ability to use things like IRAs and such to hold on to it. And it's as secure as your freaking ETF and mutual funds or whatever. It's as secure as your Ford stock, right? If you're already giving up self-custody, then you're probably better off in a more conventional brokerage account with lower fees and less risk and not being adjacent to a bunch of shit coins. I know people will get mad at me for that, but it's only because I'm giving you an option other than self-custody, and that's what you're asking me for. My number one suggestion is self-custody. I already did that one. What does running a Bitcoin node do, and do I need to worry about it? Running a node allows you to validate transactions and contribute to the Bitcoin's decentralization. Most people don't need to run a node for basic Bitcoin use. It's more of an advanced feature for those deeply involved with the ecosystem. I agree with that. I've run a node for a long time, though it's not hard. But it doesn't do much for you. If you're running a node and you're running a wallet that connects to that node, it can enable some additional privacy. Unless you really know what you're doing, though, it won't. It's still that every transaction is on the public ledger, on the public blockchain, and can be tracked. I want to encourage you to stop trying to think about getting away with things. Now, if you just want privacy because you don't want somebody to know how much money you have, a big part of that is simply using different addresses and not putting all your Bitcoin on one address. Because that way, if they do discover an address, they only know that you have that much money. Now, government can do things like clustered addresses and figure out, like, these 10 addresses are probably all held by the same person in the same wallet. But your average person that's going to show up at your house and stick a gun in your mouth is not going to be able to do that. How do I convert Bitcoin back into fiat currency if needed? Use a reputable exchange. They particularly mentioned Coinbase and Kraken to sell your Bitcoin for fiat. Transfer the fiat to your Link bank account after the sale. Be aware of any tax implications for selling Bitcoin in your jurisdiction. You know, if it's a relatively, you know, if you're not talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, if you were to have it in Strike and you could always just from your cold storage put it in Strike, you could literally send it to somebody that would receive cash if they were willing to take whatever form of payment they needed to receive on the other side of it. But I don't know exactly what those limits are because I haven't checked. The one asset that I have that I've never sold Bitcoin into cash ever. And I don't really plan to anytime soon. I do, from my shitcoin days, have a significant holding still in Ethereum. And I have sold blocks of it over time because it's way into profit for me to do things. Recently, we had to make a decision about a truck we had a lease on. Interest rates were stupid. The price of the truck was great. The payment terms were stupid. I sold some Ethereum in addition to some cash I had and paid the truck off. I did that through Coinbase. I did not feel great about the fees, transfer or sale fees at all, but it was easy. I have a track record with them. When I said put this much money in my bank account, it was there in 2 days. So I don't like Coinbase, but it might have utility. What I would say is if you're in that situation, look at every place you have an account with now and see what their terms, their limits, and their time frames are on that. And it's always okay to ask the counterparty, will you take Bitcoin? They might say yes, right? Many will say no, like fucking Toyota's like, no, we don't even want to hear about it. And that is too bad. And I think that, again, this is a tax policy issue. I can't get into the accounting, but it's a real pain in the ass to be taking something that's volatile, record its price when you received it, record its price when you divested of it, because you have to treat it like it's a stock. It is holding Bitcoin is a lot like holding stock in a company, but I can transfer the ownership to you. That's a good way to think about it. It's not the same, but it's a good way to think about it. What are UTXOs and why do they matter for understanding Bitcoin? UTXOs, unspent transaction outputs, represent the amount of Bitcoin you own after a previous transaction. They are the building blocks of Bitcoin's ledger system and affect transaction fees. Understanding UTXOs helps when planning efficient transactions. It's not exactly true, but the easiest way for you to think about it, each address is a UTXO. So all that means is that if you're have somebody paying you in Bitcoin, it's like $75. We used to tell you all the time, generate a new address and receive it to that new address. And every transaction do that. This created a mess as fees went up. And now what I'm going to tell you is you probably should have individual addresses holding at least $1,000 up to $5,000 or more. And the bigger the balance on an individual address, the lower the cost to move large amounts of Bitcoin. They each will generate different forms of fees. So if I have an address with 50, an address with 100, and an address with 500, and I need to send $650, I have $650. I can send them. They'll all combine and go to a single output UTXO on the other end. But it will cost me more to send that $650 that way than if I had $5,000 in one address and sent it. It all came out of one address. The remaining balance on that address is the UTXO. That's why I said it really is an address, but it's not. The UTXO really is what's still there, right? So if it's just an address, that's one thing. But what's on it? How much money is held in it? And if you did that and you drop down the value of one of your addresses, as you deposited, you probably would want to bring it back up to whatever you've decided to manage it at. When you hear somebody say something like, fees are low right now, it's a good time to rebalance your UTXOs, it sounds very complicated. All they're saying is send Bitcoin to yourself. Like send, you know you have all these addresses, so from those, send to one new address and combine it. That's all they're saying. Or take your biggest one and send your little ones to your biggest one. That's what they're saying to do. That's all they're saying to do. This is where some more advanced wallets, node running, et cetera, makes things a little easier to manage. And that's the real advantage. But if you're starting out, you don't have these problems. Just use good common sense and keep building up those UTXOs. It's also the case that there's new tax shit where they're basically used to be first in, first out, or managed by UTXO. The simple way to do that is once you have a wallet, get to a certain amount, stop adding to that wallet, get a new wallet and start stacking in the new wallet and keep good records of that. And again, update all your wallets at least monthly. Plug them in, see if there's any updates and stuff. If you get far enough behind, it can be a problem. You still can restore it from your seed phrase. It's just easier if you do what I just said. Okay, moving on. What are the risks of relying on obsolete devices for Bitcoin storage? This is what I was talking about. Old devices may fail, become incompatible with newer software, or become security risks. Regularly update your wallet software and migrate your Bitcoin to modern devices as needed. Don't wait until failure occurs to act. This is where I want to talk about something too, though. I have a computer. I'm using a software wallet. I don't want a hardware wallet. And I got a new computer. I'm going to get rid of this one. You better make sure you have wiped that thing the F out. You better bleach spread it and hit it with a hammer. Burn it in a fire. Like, you don't know what can be restored off your hard drive. You don't know. So make sure you're careful with disposal of old devices that you've previously used to manage your Bitcoin. You may even want to rebalance your UTXOs when that occurs and move to a new device altogether. Again, if you're using a hardware wallet, that all goes away. Let's say I do my best to wipe out the MacBook that I'm talking to you through right now. And somebody recovers my data and they are able to restore and look at my Exodus wallet there. Have fun with the $50 that's on the side you can spend. Like, that's a lot of work for $50. Because they'll be able to see, oh, this guy has money, and they're not going to be able to do anything with it. It'll just sit there, grayed out, send. It won't work, right? So just be careful. Carson says, just destroy the drive. Don't try to just delete. I agree. Like, go Hillary on it, man. Get rid of it altogether. How can multisig wallets add extra security for large amounts of Bitcoin? Multisig wallets require multiple keys to authorize the transaction, reducing the risk of losing funds if one key is compromised. They're ideal for holding large amounts of Bitcoin. Services like Unchained Capital make setting up multisig simple. I would only do it with very large amounts, and I would only do it really as part of like a inheritance strategy or very, very large amounts where it's just straight up security. Like, if you are sitting on even like $500,000 fucking bucks in Bitcoin, I probably wouldn't multisig it, or not all of it. Maybe I would multisig a portion of it, right? Stay flexible, I guess is what I'm saying. What is the timeline for Bitcoin adoption and what might it look like in 1 year or 5 years? I don't fucking know, and neither do they, but let's read what they said. Bitcoin adoption is growing steadily among individuals, institutions, and governments. In 1 year, more countries or states may adopt Bitcoin for reserves. And in 5 years, it could become a mainstream financial asset. Adoption is driven by economic instability and trust in traditional currencies. I will say it is a mainstream financial asset at this point. If you have an ETF for a thing, it's a mainstream. If you BlackRock has an ETF for a thing, it's a mainstream financial asset. By the way, ETFs for Bitcoin have grown faster than the ETFs for gold. Poor Peter Schiff. I'm sorry, bro. I'm sorry. But they have. Meaning that if Bitcoin's not a mainstream financial asset, neither is gold. Neither is SLV. Neither is silver. So if you want to keep using terminology like that, all that means is there's a whole bunch of people out. Oh, no, I'm scared. That's your problem. HFSP, right? HFSP. Have fun staying poor for those that don't know. My gut on this, 2025 is going to be a banger year for Bitcoin. Stock to flow ratio is looking at about $500,000 for the top. I don't know if I believe that, but it's yet to not actually call the top accurately. So we'll see. But the one thing I'll say is I've seen volatility decrease as number go up. It's still volatile, but the amount of volatility has decreased. So I personally think we're going to see a really big time 2025. I think you're going to see very, very expensive in the minds of many people Bitcoin in 2025. Then you'll have a huge correction and everybody will scream and wail and say it crashed. And, you know, there's people right now that are saying things like, this might be your last time to buy Bitcoin under $100,000. And I was like, I just posted on this the other day. I said, does anybody remember how many times you heard that about $10,000? This is, I might have even said it. I probably couched it with, but I could be wrong, right? But this is the last time to buy Bitcoin under $10,000. And damn it, it went to 69 grand in the prior cycle. And it almost broke it again on the downside. It was like 14.5, 14.7 was the bottom. I think I called 14.4 and I was within a few hundred dollars of it because it's math. It's actually not that hard to figure out. So you could see Bitcoin hit 400 grand and drop to 90. And then you'll hear people say, it crashed. But if you had told that same person 5 years ago, it would hit 90,000, let alone crash to it. They would tell you, it's tulip mania. Like, just, you got to put these people aside. Bitcoin, to be very clear, in the words of Mandrake, who I follow and have followed for years, is maximum pain all the way. You guys look at people like us who have been in it for a while. We've been stacking for a while. We've done very well with it. We've built a lot of wealth with it. And you say, man, I want to be like them. And you're like the kid that watches a basketball game and wants to be Michael Jordan and cries because the first time he throws the ball, he can't even hit the rim, let alone make the shot. It's going to take time and it's going to hurt, right? It's going to hurt when you start stacking and eventually there's a correction. The first time you get a correction, it's like 5 points. It doesn't even matter. You're still in the money. You're going to start freaking out because yesterday your number was bigger. And you're going to have to shut the fuck up, grow the fuck up, be a big boy, and treat it like your 401k. Because this is what I know about these. This is what I know. I've learned this over the years. Person talks to you for months. Like you're their crutch. Oh, baby, I'm not sure about buying. I don't know. Okay, fine. Here's how you buy Bitcoin. I can't help you anymore. Decide. And you follow you. Check, I bought Bitcoin. Great. How much? Like $100. Okay, great. Keep doing it. DCA, do it however you want to do it. Just buy Bitcoin. And then you get an email. Oh, I have $2,800. That's awesome. That's great. Keep going. I got $4,200. That's like, and that person, it might be the most money they've ever had in one place in their life. Okay. Other than a 401k. And then Bitcoin will have a big correction and they'll be like, it crashed. I only have $2,000. I had $4,800 3 months ago. Should I sell? No. Now you should keep buying and buy more and buy more and buy more. But what if it goes to zero? It's not going to go to zero. The lower it goes, the better. While you're worried about selling, I'm literally looking around going, what can I fucking sell to buy more Bitcoin? And if you make it through that and you come back up the other side of the cycle and down another one, you go like this. You become fucking Buddha. You don't care. Because that same person that same person gets a quarterly statement maybe from their 401k. And a quarterly statement comes in and says, you have $165,000. And they go, woohoo! And then the quarterly statement comes in next cycle and the market went down and says, you have $100,000. And they go, well, that sucks. And then it comes back and then, you know, next thing you know, they got $250,000 in there and they're happy again. And they look at it once every, you know, 3 months. Some people are probably twice a year you get a statement. And you don't worry about it. You don't log into your 401k every day and start hitting refresh like a retard. And if you did, no financial advisor would even want to, even a good one, would not want to work with you. Like, you're not the person I can work with, right? If anybody knows the movie Boiler Room, it's like the pitch the bitch thing. You don't do that because, and if you don't know, you can look it up, right? This is, I don't know, somebody there says five people watching is disappointing. This is potentially the best thing one could do. You must be on my alternate channel. Whoever that is, AD, this guy right here, because there's 107 watching combined on YouTube alone right now. So don't worry about it. There's plenty of people. There's another 28 over here on a completely different service. So there's plenty of people here. But yeah, like you don't pitch the bitch. And I'll explain to you. This is not my opinion. This is from a movie from the fucking 90s, right? It's a stockbroker scam movie. Like these guys are selling stocks that are like micro stocks, and they're just basically ripping people off. And the guy says the problem with pitching a woman is if it goes up like 10%, they call you and they want to talk. And if it goes down, it's even, you know, when it goes down, it's bad, but when it goes up, it's even worse. You want a guy because you sell him a stock and he just says, that's part of my portfolio, and he shuts up. That's probably not what good to do with somebody you don't know that called you on the phone to sell you a micro stock. That's probably bad. But when it comes to Bitcoin, it's exactly what you should do. And this is what I want you to DCA every day. I don't care what you – and just don't tell me you can't afford it. You can afford a dollar a day. I guarantee you I can go into your life and I can find something you're fucking around with for a dollar a day that you can get rid of. Okay? There is some way you could – a dollar, two, three, four, five. Okay? When you're DCAing every day, even in those small amounts, when you wake up and you go – fuck, Bitcoin was 107 grand. It's down to 92. You don't go, it crashed like an idiot. You go, oh, look, I got more sats today. Oh, look. And you start rooting for it to short term go down. And the longer you're in it, the more you're forged as a maxi, the more you'll root for. And I swear to God, if it drops crazy down for some reason, you'll be looking like, do I really need that gun? I only bought that gun because it was cool. It looked cool. I don't really shoot it. I wonder how much I can, and you'll like sell shit. The dog's like, don't sell me, bitch. I'm your dog, right? Like you're looking for ways to raise capital when it goes down if you're in that mode. And if you're not, you get into stupid panic mode and you do dumb things. And you're the guy that says, well, I had to sell it when it went down. And I go like, well, did you need a kidney operation or were you going to get kicked out of your house or something? Because that is the risk, right? If you have reserve capital and it's only the reserve capital you have, and it happens to be a down cycle, and at the same time an emergency happens, okay, yeah, but it's almost never the case. It's like, because it was going to, I couldn't lose anymore. You haven't lost anything. You haven't lost or gained anything until you sell. That's when you realize the gain or the loss. Oh, by the way, the magic of Bitcoin is if you manage your purchases right and you do keep it all, like from this year in this wallet or whatever, well, if it does drop, you can sell it. 5 minutes later, you can buy it back, and then you can write the loss off. The wash rule doesn't apply. You can't do that with a stock. There's a waiting period. You sell a stock to capture the loss. You have to wait to buy it back. If you buy it back the next 5 minutes, then it's a wash. You haven't harvested the loss. For now, Bitcoin and crypto still do not have the wash rule. So that may change, and if it changes and makes the overall tax policy on it better, it will be worth the exchange. How do governments and institutions impact Bitcoin adoption or crashes? Governments and institutions can accelerate adoption by buying or regulating Bitcoin, printing fiat to buy Bitcoin, or restrictions on exchanges can cause volatility. Bitcoin's value ultimately depends on its decentralized nature and global trust. All that's saying is that when countries do things that are good for Bitcoin, it inspires buying sentiment and number go up. And when countries tend to do things that are detrimental to Bitcoin, then number go down because it causes selling, especially if it's rumored that a country was going to do a good thing and then they don't do it or they actually do something negative, then all the FOMO money that jumped in starts jumping out. Same shit. I had to sell it because it was going down. No, you didn't. Of course, this keys in right now. Is Trump going to make good on a strategic Bitcoin reserve? I think he will. That may have happened while we're talking. I don't know because there's a shitload of stuff for him to sign yet, including freeing Ross. But I've got multiple confirmations last night. Ross is going free. Hell, Elon Musk said Ross will be freed. Don't worry about it. It's happening. Okay. So it may have already happened and I may have missed it, but I think somebody probably would have told me in live chat. If Trump doesn't do it, I don't even care. I have not factored into my decision making a U.S. I'll be happy if it happens. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. This is a problem. Most of that Bitcoin he stole. Well, he didn't steal it. The United States government stole from Ross Ulbricht. All of it's seized. None of it has been bought. And all they're talking about is it's sitting on the government's balance sheet right now, is saying we're going to put it over here instead of over here. That's all it would be, unless they commit to buying more. But if you just even moved it over and you made the political statement of the United States now holds Bitcoin as a strategic asset in reserve the way that we hold gold, what's going to happen is most other countries will begin moving in that direction. And when you start looking at countries buying, the pressure on the finite asset is insane. Insane. The smartest thing a country could do right now, I'm not necessarily saying I want them to, because it'll give them more power ultimately. But if I could print fiat at no real cost and buy Bitcoin, you know how much Bitcoin I would buy? All of it. I would buy it all. And I would spend very little of it because I wouldn't have to because it would go up so high. And the more I could hold, the better. Because then you're not talking about somebody like MicroStrategy holding 400,000 Bitcoin. You're talking about somebody like the United States could buy about 2 million Bitcoin. There is a plan for the United States over time to buy 4 to 5 million Bitcoin. It can't happen. It can't happen. The more it happens, the more people will hold. And the harder it will be to get them to sell. You have to push the number to something insane. And at some point, if a country's holding it, you're going, unless you can clearly articulate how you've managed to make this Bitcoin back your dollars or your other fiat, I don't want your fiat. I want the Bitcoin just like you do. You get nation adoption at any scalable level. And then the wailing and gnashing of teeth I'm going to hear from all of you. I've told to do this for over 10 years. I'm not even going to listen. I'm going to be too busy, you know, having somebody feed me grapes or something at that point. And I wouldn't really do that. I'm just kind of making a point, trying to be funny. How can estate planning help ensure Bitcoin is accessible to loved ones after a death? Include Bitcoin in your will and designate a trusted executor who understands how to access it. Document clear instructions for recovering keys and seed phrases. Multi-sig wallets can simplify inheritance by distributing access across multiple people. Throw that away. Talk to whoever you plan your estate with. If you don't have somebody you plan your estate with, you need to find somebody, okay? Unless you don't have enough money for it to matter. If you have enough money to ask the question, you need an estate planner. You really do. And again, what you do will be different. If you have one heir, you know, we have a plan where it's some rare, weird thing that my wife and I pick my son up, we get hit by a truck, and my daughter-in-law and my grandkids are left. They get the money, but it would happen differently than if Matthew was still around. There is some things that require some trust and distribution schedules in that event. I don't want to leave my daughter-in-law with nothing trying to raise my two grandkids, but I don't want to give my two grandkids a huge amount of money, and I don't want to give her too much money at once. But I want to make sure she can stay in her home, pay her bills, and live her life. And so that has to do with life insurance and other things as well that go into that. But that is my situation. What about you? You got five kids. It's different. You got five kids and you own a farm worth, you own a farm worth $10 million on paper. If it can be sold, you're in a totally different situation than I'm in. Even if I have as much money as you and I don't. Okay. Right. like one way or another, you have a unique individual need that you need to fulfill with this. I also wanted to talk to you about Bitcoin taxes and in some levels why you need to just stop worrying about it. So one of the questions I got today was, but why is there a question on the 1040 about whether you've held or touched or sold or bought crypto? I don't even say Bitcoin, I say crypto in the last tax year on the 1040. It is a trap. Answer it truthfully. And but if I just bought it, I don't owe any money. That's fine. You still you do not lie on a form that you file to the government. It's a trap. It is a gotcha. If you have touched Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency in any meaningful way, including you bought it 5 years ago and you just held it through this year, the answer to that question is yes. That's the answer. The answer to the question is yes. It doesn't mean you have to do anything. I keep trying to explain to people. Let's say that you have $10 million worth of Bitcoin. You bought it for $500,000 over time. You know how much money you owe in tax right now? You owe nothing. It's an unrealized gain. You could take pictures of it and mail it to your own personal IRS agent. They can't do anything. You're following the law as written. You're following tax code as written. It is only when it is sold and only the portion that's sold realizes a gain that taxes are paid on. But why are we doing this? So for me, and you know, this I guess has to do with what you're going to do. But for me, I'm doing this as part of my long-term wealth accumulation plan so that one day I don't have to work for money anymore. And I want you to think about it this way. Yes, if it's not in an IRA or something, which I said, if you have money in an IRA, you want to put in Bitcoin, leave it there so you have the tax advantages. But let's say you hit 65 and you have $5 million in Bitcoin. You can probably pay yourself $150,000 a year off it, pay the taxes on the gain, and never outlive your money. And you're not even get close. You'll probably die with more than you have right now. You're in a neighborhood there of a – you know, a withdrawal of what, about 3-4% on an asset that, you know, you kind of need about a 20% gain over time to balance that out as you're pulling off one end on the other, that easily exceeds that by multiples. So what? We all pay taxes. We all pay taxes. This idea, like, I want you to put it a different way. No one has ever said, Jack, you know what I did? I have a brokerage account that's outside of my – so it's taxable. And I bought Ford when it was like $2 a share when you know, they did the auto bailouts all those years ago. And now I have a shitload of money. I don't want to pay tax on it. Obviously, I'm going to pay tax on it when I sell it. So I'm not going to sell it all at once. And take the biggest tax hit possible. I'll sell it as I need because I have a solid underlying asset and I'm going to take from it as I need to. Like, do you do this with anything? Where is this mindset? Like, obviously I hate taxation. And if there's a way to do it without losing everything I have, I won't pay them shit. Right? I don't pay them shit. Oh, by the way, Jim is dead on here. Jim says, if you have kids but no will, you're wrong. Absolutely. I think if you don't have a will, you're wrong. A will makes everything so much easier. And if you have sizable assets, you need estate planning and you need a trust-based system where you can avoid probate. But there's a lot of property that just instantly let me be clear. There's a lot of people on TikTok and Instagram, and they're all genius accountants or whatever, business people, and they have all this advice about what you need to do with your money. Do not listen to these people. Have professionals who work for you that understand your individual situation, because most of them in the macro do not know what the fuck they're talking about. They're just rambling bullshit that they pulled off of a script that ChatGPT wrote for them, and they can't explain it the way that I'm explaining it to you, right? They just sound smart because they're using big words. The other side, though, even if they know what they're talking about, they don't know how it applies to you. They have no idea how it applies to you. They have no idea that you're sitting there with, like, you have, like, you know, $5,000 in the bank and a house that your kid's name is already on and he already lives there. He lives at home with you and takes care of you because you're fucking old and you're 5 years from death and you don't really give a shit. And all of a sudden you think you need an estate planner and you need a trust to avoid probate instead of the fact that the kid already has possession of the property. You don't need that. But you need to talk to somebody to figure out your own individual needs. I also want to tell you something real quick about what you're hearing about Trump and Trump coin and all this shit. Okay, Trump coin is a shit coin. I have no idea if Trump himself could even explain to you what it is or how it works. He probably can't. But there's also this thing. They bought a whole bunch of shit coins. Don Jr. announced it. And they bought something called Wrapped Bitcoin. And, of course, the Bitcoin maxis are enraged. It's not real Bitcoin. These are the same people that say that ETF isn't real Bitcoin. It's one-to-one backed. It's an Ethereum contract. I would never buy it myself, to be clear. But it basically allows you to partake in DeFi or decentralized financing and to borrow against your Bitcoin. Don't do this. That's what they're doing. That way they can spend the capital, acquire the Bitcoin, and still leverage it through debt to trade other shit. But you have to trade other shit. And Coinbase just rolled this out. And I want you to be very careful getting anywhere near this. This DeFi scheme, think of Coinbase like a wallet in this thing. It's like a signing device that lets you do it, and they make a riff off of doing it. But it's actually something anybody can do. You take your Bitcoin and you convert it to WBTC, which is Wrapped Bitcoin. So it's now Bitcoin running on the Ethereum chain. And that makes it eligible, or it makes it work for Ethereum-based smart contracts. And now you could say, well, I've posted $50,000 worth of Bitcoin, and I want to borrow X amount against it and use it as collateral. The program Coinbase rolled out is impossible to decipher what you're actually going to pay. The best I can figure out is you're paying 9 to 20%, and that number can change on the fly at any time without you knowing it. Oh, don't worry. You only pay it back when you feel like it, except you get deeper and deeper and deeper in debt with the interest compounding on itself. And if you get into an out of balance situation, the whole point of wrapping the Bitcoin is someone else can take it, which means it is real Bitcoin, because if it wasn't real Bitcoin, the counterparty wouldn't take it as collateral. You're locking Bitcoin into a smart contract on Ethereum with this. Don't do it, but don't believe somebody when they say it's paper Bitcoin. This is fucking stupid, because taking Bitcoin and putting it into Wrapped Bitcoin doesn't make more Bitcoin. That's paper Bitcoin. That would be paper Bitcoin. If you had a thing and you're like, you're holding 10 Bitcoin, you're loaning out 20, that's paper Bitcoin, because that loan can't be called out. This is just you've allowed a different form of custodianship that has a contract that says, in the event that these things occur, return it. In the event that these things occur, give it to somebody else who's accepted it as collateral. This is actually how this is going to work in the end. It probably will not have anything to do with Ethereum or Solana or any of these other shitcoins. There will be smart contracts built for Bitcoin that will have good and discernible terms. Like, you can borrow this much against your Bitcoin as collateral, and as you service the loan, the amount that needs to be held in collateral goes down, and you have an interest rate of, let's say, 4 or 5%, because it is a better asset to hold as collateral than a house. If you give me a loan on a house, and you say, well, we gave him a $200,000 loan on a house worth $200,000, we're good. That house is not immediately liquid, and I can fuck the house up while I'm here. Maybe I go crazy in my old age, and I start smearing shit on the walls or something. Who knows? And I don't take care of my house, and it goes into complete disrepair, and I'm making my minimum mortgage payments, and all of a sudden I can't make payments anymore. And so you repossess the house and you find out that even though it should have went up in value, that no one will touch it. I can't break Bitcoin. I can't pull the copper out of the walls of a Bitcoin. It is pristine capital, but there are no good term loans against it yet. And I would never trust Coinbase with it. They're not even the ones doing the loans. They're basically a loan broker skimming part of the profit, which is predatory. Okay, but that's what Wrapped Bitcoin is. And if you have any questions and you haven't already asked them, now would be the time. I'm going to cover the item of the day, and then I'm going to come back and answer questions, and we're going to write up. And once again, we've gone way longer than I planned on. So my item of the day today is the same one as yesterday. It is the Thermo Maven Instant Read Thermometer. It is a great tool for you guys that want to do a better job cooking at home. And I really recommend you check it out. And it's still on sale as of this morning. Anyway, I haven't checked this afternoon for $20 versus $30. It's a great tool. I wanted to tell you just a little bit more about it, though. So if you're on the video, you can see I'm holding it up to the camera right now. It is a very well-built tool. And you can see it's got the little cover right there. One screw comes out, one little Phillips screw comes out, and it's AAA batteries. That means if you use rechargeables, you have rechargeables for it. If you don't use rechargeables, throw Duracells in it. That's probably the best. When you open it, it comes on. And when you close it, it goes off. When you put this in a piece of meat, it is like a half-second response time, and you know how the temperature is. If you're cooking meats and steaks and chops and things like that, you don't have a thermometer. You know, I'm pretty good at getting a steak the way I want it, but like getting it the way my wife wants it without going too far, that's hard. She wants it a little bit pink, just a little bit pink. I don't want to see too much red. It makes me icky. You know, and I know I've always told her if I blindfold you, you'd prefer my steak, but you know, happy wife, happy life, right? And then you got other people, and then there's other things you need to cook. You're worried about things that are like health issues. You understand, right? No, Ken, BTC should not increase the block size. Go away. Stop talking to shit coiners and don't delve into that world. You're not ready for it yet, bro. Stick to carbs. Stick to telling people not to eat carbs. Okay, I'll put it this way. Ken Berry's here. He says shitcoin discussions, and that's a shitcoin discussion. You should treat that the way you treat people to say, but can I have some of the carbs in do you eat pasta when you're on carnivore? There you go. That's how you, I read a book. Okay. Anyway, check this thing out. It's just a great tool and it's got some cool extra features. It's got a bottle opener so you can have a beer or something while you're cooking. It's got magnets on the back. Because I lose it all the time, so now I just stick it to the side of the refrigerator so it's always there. But the big thing is, I also love tools like this. This is a meter block. These are very expensive, and they have these individual probes. Each probe is actually Bluetooth. And you can put this into a cut of meat, and then when you're cooking, your app on your phone tells you like how long is left, what the temperature is. You can set up a cook for a roast or something like that. And they work for steaks if they're like an inch thick. But you see how big around they are? See how big that thing is? You can't put that in like a half-inch chop or something. You can't do that and get a good reading. You need something like the Instant Read. So there are different tools for different purposes, just like self-custody, Bitcoin, and an ETF are different tools for different purposes. All right, so with that, let's go ahead and start taking some questions, and we're going to ignore Ken's because I know it's fucking troll question. He's going to be – the node discussion I had just recently had with Ken, what do you think this will do for you? And I told them how to do it, but I also said, like, make sure it's, like, something that actually works for you. Frankie says, how does a newbie like me find a crypto ledger or wallet and how to use it? We covered that pretty good. Again, I recommend a Trezor Model T. I will also say this. If you have less than about $5,000, there is nothing wrong with, until you get up to that number, using a good software wallet like Coinomi or Exodus. It's as secure as you make it, okay? It's just, you got to think of it this way. This costs $100. How much money can you hold before you're willing to go out to an insurance company and say, I will pay you $100 one time to insure my money? That's how I look at this. So when you start stacking into the six figures, to me, you know, 50, 100 grand per wallet. I know that's a lot to manage for some people. You know, if you get up to a lot of money, maybe there's some other things you look at with multi-sig and all. But I'm telling you, this is an insurance policy. And just like if you had, if I gave you a choice and said you could have 10, you could have 10 $20 bills, or you can have $200 bills. The smart person wants the 10-20s, not just because they're easier to spend, but because if I lose one, I haven't lost half of everything that I have. But yeah, I mean, guys, when you're just getting started, just use a software wallet. Read my article at the Bitcoin Breakout. Go to Bitcoin Tools go to the Bitcoin Breakout and search self-custody. And read my article and listen to my episode on self-custody. Flurry Fitness, You have discussed the possibility that may be done with 70% corrections that have historically been a part of Bitcoin cycles. Is it possible we are done with the 65% gains year to year yet too? I don't think so. We're not on a 65% gain right now. Bitcoin is up right at 100% over the last 12 months. So I don't think so. I think that eventually we'll settle into something like annualized 50% gains over 10 years. And that's still insane everything else. I do think we are not going up as much. And so we're coming down less as well. We're still down the same percentage, but the less in the total. But if you look at Bitcoin over like since inception, you'll see in the initial ramp up into like the 2013, 2014 range that it is significantly sharper. And that's where some of the insane numbers of returns come from people. But if you, and I think it's like March of 2013, it might be March of 2014. There's a point in the total graph of, you know, all time that the upward angle is pretty much the same all the way through. And so, again, it's maximum pain. If you're not prepared to deal with a downturn of 50, 60, 70%, you don't deserve a 500% upside. You don't. You're not ready for it yet. You don't have the discipline to do it yet. I'm sorry. Texas Plant Company, BTC price prediction this year with Trump. Any thoughts on the master price? So I don't even need to consider, in my opinion, buying Masterlink as a stock. I don't do individual stocks unless I have a very, very good reason and I have all the Bitcoin exposure that I need. Different buckets, different purposes, different timelines. It's a very interesting play Michael's making, and it will work right up until other people start doing it. And then it will work really well for Masterlink, but less so for Masterlink stock holders, because now you'll have more choices. Right now, you don't really have another choice to somebody that's went this hard all in that's a publicly traded company. So I don't know. I think you can make a lot of money with it, but I'm actually very conservative with my investing. And the more conservative I get, the larger my allocation to Bitcoin. And Michael actually will tell you the same thing. He's like, we're making it possible for people that can't do it any other way. And since people will do it, we'll do it too. The new old man says, do you need a VPN in Texas to use wallets? Have you heard of MetaMask app? MetaMask is a shitcoin wallet that is embedded in your browser, and you probably shouldn't use it because it's shitcoins. It's not really what I would do. And no, you do not need a VPN in Texas to use a wallet. I don't know where that comes from at all. VPN is a great security measure. It helps hide your location. So if you wanted to do certain things, you might use a VPN. So if you were into shitcoins, for instance, you could use some of the way they do ICOs, you could use a VPN to make it look like you're in Vietnam or Spain, and you could participate in things not available to non-accredited and registered investors in the state or the country of the United States if their securities lapse on actually checking for that. Like, we do what we could, man. Guy looked like he was in France or whatever. But a VPN has nothing to do with the use of a wallet. It would, again, make your transactions a little bit more secure. But again, who's the counterparty? Are they using a VPN, et cetera? And what is your overall security? A VPN is great for what a VPN does, but it really doesn't have anything to do with using a wallet. So if you want to clarify that question, go ahead. Dennis says, can I take a pic of my passphrase on my cell phone that links up to Dennis, you know the answer to that. Don't do that. That's dumb. But people do it. I think that's why he asked the question. So what he's saying is, you know, I can take a picture of my passphrase and then I would never lose it. And it's backed up in iCloud. Yeah. And if it gets hacked, then somebody can steal your shit. I do have a question for you guys, though. There's a scam, and I've never played with the scammers enough to figure out what the end goal is. But I guarantee you I'm going to get comments like that in this episode. And probably my alt channel, definitely, because that gets more scammers, because I have much better anti-spam filtering set up on this YouTube channel, the main YouTube channel for the show. But it'll be something like this. They'll make totally unrelated questions, but I have, you know, Solana or USDT or whatever in my wallet, you know, my whatever, my bullshit wallet. My seed phrase is, and it'll list like 12 random words, which totally are not going to be a seed phrase. Nobody would do that. How do I move it to, you know, Coinbase? That's clearly a scam. What is the scam, though? What do they hope to gain by saying that? Are they going to try to trick you into giving them your seed phrase to show them how it works or what? I don't know, but I've seen that one a lot lately, and I immediately just ban that person from my channel. But if anybody, what are they trying to accomplish is what I'm asking. Stanbridge says, I usually wait a few weeks after a firmware update is released for my Trezors before I update them. If there's a bug or a security flaw in the firmware, am I too paranoid? I don't necessarily think so. I just make sure I plug them in once a month. But that's actually not a terrible idea. You'd be one version back, and that way if there was a bug in the update, you didn't get the bug. I would say one thing, like, don't be too paranoid in that what if the firmware update fixes a bug from the last version? And sometimes they tell you that and sometimes they don't because they don't want anybody to know that there's a bug there. And maybe it's not really a bug. It's a potential bug. So I don't know. I think best practice would be in general to be in the most updated version possible. Carson says, question, not really, but today I made a post on Ledger on X because I got scam email and so many scammers responded to it. So what he's saying is he got an email probably that said something like you need to update your device, update your seed phrase, update your password. If you get an email from Ledger or any wallet provider that say, or any exchange that you need to log in through this link and fix this, it is a scam. It is always a scam. No one like that is going to send you an email and tell you to click a link in the email to do a thing with your account or your wallet or your backup or anything like that ever. They will never, ever, ever, ever infinity do that. So if you get that email, it is somebody trying to sucker you. If you are worried about your device, your backup, whatever, delete that email and on a totally different device, log into your account there or whatever. And that's not just Bitcoin. That's your bank. Your bank is not going to send you an email and say, hey, we locked your account for security purposes. To unlock your account, click this link. That's not going to happen either. None of that shit. If you get an email and it says, your mailbox is full, log in this link to clear it out, you're reading your own email. Don't do that. Don't do that. Delete that shit. Go in another way. And if there's a problem, they'll let you know. And there won't be. It won't be related to the email you got. Ham Sandwich says, is there a way for our, what is the best way to be paid in Bitcoin? Okay. Basically, what is the best way to be paid in Bitcoin? Get paid in fiat and buy Bitcoin. That's how. Now, Strike has a thing. If you just want, let's say, 10% of every paycheck to automatically go in Bitcoin, if you have a Strike account, and I'm sure others have this too now, it's called Pay Me in Bitcoin, though, when Strike released, that's what they call the feature. You get a direct deposit form, and you go to your HR Karen, and you say, I want my direct deposit sent here. To your employer, it is no different than sending it to Bank of America or Comerica or Capital One Bank or whatever. It's exactly the same. All it is, though, is you've set it up inside Strike that Strike knows this money becomes Bitcoin or half this money becomes Bitcoin. So that's a great way to kind of DCA every time you get pay, if you want to do it that way. I would be more likely to set up the direct deposit as fiat to fiat. So let's say that you're going to put in 10% of your paycheck every 2 weeks and you make, just to make it round, $1,000 a week. You make $52,000 a year, right? So $2,000 of your actual pay, like after taxes, let's say in this example. So $200 is going to, like $1,800 is going to go to your regular bank and $200 is going to go to Strike. And then I would set up a balancing DCA every day to make sure that that money is gone in 14 days. So it's, I know it's going to be about $200. 200 divided by 14 is my daily DCA. And I am digging the hell out of even small buys with this way that you're manipulating the purchase price on ups and downs. Did you buy the dip? Yeah. Did you buy the all-time high? Yep. How's that work? DCA every day, baby. Tommy says, what if your seed phrase is compromised? Send back to exchange. Just get one way or another. We covered that already. Get it out of that wallet. Whatever wallet you think is compromised, just get it out of there. The problem is if it happens, you probably won't know. If I was a scammer, if I was a thief and I get your seed phrase, your fucking money's gone, bro. It will take me 5 minutes once I have it and your money's gone. That's why it has to be secured. That's why if you get into larger amounts, you might want to look at multisig. Question, can your hot wallet get compromised from sharing your public address? For example, if there's a giveaway for some Bitcoin and you have to drop your wallet address, what they would know is what's on that address. But you shouldn't have all your Bitcoin on one address. So let's say you had a wallet and there was something like, if you post your address and we draw, we'll send you $50 or something. You would just give them your address with the lowest balance, or you generate a new address. But that's not your wallet. That's your public address. Your public address can be known anyway, just not necessarily that it's your public address. I would say I don't know of an instance like this that I would trust. I really don't. I don't know who would do this. This sounds like a phishing attempt in some way, and who knows what other things they're doing. Like, okay, you dropped it, and now I have your IP, and with your IP, I can kind of figure out who and where you are. Like, I just wouldn't do this. But somebody knowing your public address is not a security risk unless, you know, that public address has like $15 million on it, because that's the $5 wrench attack. Instead of a quantum computer, a $5 wrench. How's a $5 wrench attack work? So I send two goons to your house with a $5 crescent wrench, and they beat you until you unlock your wallet for them. It's a very effective method of hacking. Okay. So that's the risk, because to receive Bitcoin, somebody must know your public address. So you should think about it a little bit like logging into an account. You have a username and you have a password. So when you go to X and you log in on X, and like, because I was stupid at the time I set it up, my X handle is the Survival Pod C, because I couldn't do Survival Podcast. It wouldn't fit. I should have done Modern Survival Everywhere is what I should have done as a branding thing or something associated, but I didn't. But it's the Survival Pod C. Can you hack my X account because you know my username? No, you would need my complex password on the other side. Now imagine your username is this giant string and your password is this giant string. And there's more permutations of that string than are atoms in the universe. It's as secure as you keep it, okay? Let's see. Flurfy Fitness says, Jack, I'm grateful for your knowledge and gave me $1.99. Thank you. Halheem, $2 super chat, and just says, thank you. Thank you for that. And Gahilmer, I guess is how you say it. Question, is there a specific place to get a hardware wallet that is reputable, or is Amazon fine? Amazon is fine if you're buying from the wallet manufacturer. In fact, it is really no different. So if you want to buy a Trezor from Trezor directly, you can do that too. I put the Amazon links in the video notes because it's convenient for people that use it all the time. If you go to the Bitcoin Breakout and click on Bitcoin Tools, you can go straight to Trezor and buy it. In any event, you always need to be buying from the wallet manufacturer. If you're buying a Trezor from Trezor, again, when it comes, it is basically empty. And I don't mean there's no Bitcoin in it. There's no code in it. You're buying raw hardware, and you install the code. I know that might scare you. It's not hard. You follow the prompts when you plug it in. And in fact, if you're going to pair it with Exodus, if you try to pair it with Exodus before, this is something I really should have said that earlier. It won't work. You have to install, like you have to plug it in and do what it tells you to do and prompts you to do and install the code. And then you can pair it with Exodus. And Exodus has great material on how to do that. So hopefully that answers. LibertyCast says, appreciate you, Jack. Thanks for streaming today. May God continue to bless you richly in 2025 beyond, in a $5 super chat. Thank you, LibertyCast. LibertyCast just paid for my DCA today. And I really do. If you guys follow me on X, if you guys follow me on Nostr, those two places, I post my screenshot every day, and I made a commitment that I will do it for 365 days in a row. And only DCA automated will allow that, because like last weekend I had to rush the cat to the vet. We spent like $500 on the cat for testing and shit, because the cat wouldn't eat. The cat was dehydrated. The cat needed antibiotics. The cat needed fluids because the cat wouldn't drink. And while I was sitting in the vet's office with the cat on my lap, boop, your DCA went through. That is incredibly powerful. That's a way to make sure you do the things that you should be doing anyway. More people asking about XR. There it is. I'm just going to say, there you go. There's your answer to that one if you're in the chat. I don't see anything else that came in while I was asking or answering those questions. Another two-hour show. Okay, another person. Tell us what you really think about XRP. It's a shit coin. It is a coin manufactured by an entity that gave an awful lot of money to Kamala Harris. It's an entity that has a very close association with the World Economic Forum. Oh, but I want to give you some good news about Orange Band that has really nothing to do directly with crypto in any way. Orange Band, remember, I have to say it 50 times to piss off our special-minded friend. Orange Man did something really great yesterday, something that I don't think enough people are aware of, and again, it has nothing to do with crypto. The World Health Organization was the architect of global tyranny during COVID. The World Health Organization's goal is to have a pandemic treaty that tells all the other countries what they have agreed to and have to do if there's another pandemic. The World Health Organization is the source of vaccine passports and other things and tracking and all the other shit and how CBDCs would play into that and all. With a stroke of a pen yesterday, Orange Man did a beautiful thing. He removed the United States from the WHO. We are no longer a member. We are no longer part of that monstrosity. And we are no longer giving them hundreds of fucking millions of dollars a year only to have India and China have the most say in what happens while giving the least money. The World Health Organization is a disgrace. It is a catastrophe. And it is a place where money goes to be grifted, stolen, and die. And Orange Man got rid of any United States association with the World Health Organization yesterday, in addition to a bunch of other things that were actually really good. So I wanted to give you kind of an upstroke on the end there. And with that, we will sign off. Thanks for everybody tuning in. Tomorrow we'll have an interview, Expert Counsel Show, Friday Flashback. We'll do it all again next week.
They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.